So on Daf Yutes Amud Beis, and just to keep everyone updated, so we're learning Masech to Sanhedrin, and we discussed a story about Gavriel HaMalach. As the Gemara tells us that at the time of Yanai was the king of Israel, one of what we call Malchi Yisrael. He was not from Shevet Yehuda. He was not a descendant of what we call the Davidic dynasty. So he wasn't from Malchus based David. He was Malchus based Yisrael. And he was a very wicked king. At some point he did tshuva, but then he went back to his old ways and he was evil. And the Gemara tells us a story about the head of the Beis Din, whose name was Shimon ben Shetach, one of the all-star giants of the Tanoim. And the word got out that the slave of Yanai HaMelech, the king's Eved, had actually committed murder. They had to judge him in front of a high court. They needed a Sanhedrin, and the head of the court was Shimon ben Shetach. And Shimon ben Shetach had no mercy on the fact that this Eved was the Eved of the Melech. That the fact that he's the Eved of the Melech doesn't make him less guilty of the crime of murder. And therefore he has to be tried and put to death if he's condemned based on the evidence. And there's halacha that when you try an Eved, we're talking about now an Eved Kanani, then the owner of the Eved has to show up in the Beis Din. He has to be standing there at the time of the trial. That's derived from a parasha of Sharon Niskal, but that's not for us. So Rav Shimon ben Shetach therefore summoned Yanai HaMelech, and not only was Yanai HaMelech called to come to the case, to the trial of his Eved, but he was required to stand in front of the Beis Din. And Yanai HaMelech didn't do so. You know, he felt that was an insult to his kavod. So Shimon ben Shetach looked to his left and to his right to see if the other members of the court were with him, so to speak. They would support his position against Yanai HaMelech, that Yanai HaMelech was legally required to stand there at the time of the trial. And sure enough, each one of the judges on the high court bowed his head down, making believe he didn't know what was going on. They didn't want to be judged, judge against the king. As a result, Gavriel had a blast over here. You know, Gavriel is the Malach HaMavos; he brings death. In our parsha this week, he also cashes in big. He destroys the city of Stone, and that's Gavriel HaMalach. Gavriel has this very, this role in amongst the angels of being the person in charge of justice. He's the one who waves the flag of Onesh, of Beis Din, of the Beis Din Shalmala meeting out punishment. That's what we did yesterday. So where are we up to today? So we're on Daf Yutes Amud Beis. Let's see if everybody has the right place. And you'll count down from the top of the Omud about 7-8 lines until you see the two dots. How many lines is it?
Seven
lines? Okay. Now this Gemara is focused on the status of a melech. And we said that the melech is representative of malchus. He's the, you know, he's the human form of representing the concept of malchus. And therefore we require what's called awe of Malchus. A maso olecha. The fear of the king has to be upon us. There are many halachas that we derive from the pasuk that indicates, and we'll see this pasuk momentarily, that we have to have ema for the melech, a respect and an awe for the king. So that concept of ema applies in our relationship to God, in our relationship to our parents, in our relationship to a Talmud Chacham, in our relationship to the melech. We'll see about Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara wants to know, are there situations in which the melech can decide, you know what, instead of the people having such awe, I want to fulfill a mitzvah, And even if that mitzvah entails a certain degradation or a certain below my dignity, I'm going to do so. And I'm going to waive my kavod. So the Mishnah says, lo choleitz v'lo choltzim li'ishta, which means that if the king's brother dies childless and leaves the king's sister-in-law as a widow, and now she falls for Yibum in front of the Melech himself, so the Mishnah says, lo choleitz, there's no chalitza, because in the process of chalitza, what has to happen, Rav Osai? She has to spit in front of him, and that's a degradation to the king. And then the Mishnah goes on to speak about the wife of the king in the case where the king died childless. But that's not for us now. We're going to focus our attention on the case where the king's brother died childless. And now his sister-in-law falls for Yibum. And the Mishnah says, lo choleitz. Now for the woman, that could be very bad news. Why? Because let's assume there were only two brothers. There's the late brother who died childless, and there's the king. There's no third brother. And if she gets stuck now without chalitza,
never marry.
Then she can't marry anyone. That's not a very good situation. So the melech, if he has compassion, he's motivated to want to fulfill this great mitzvah of giving her chalitza. But yet the Mishnah says, lo choleitz. Now Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is recorded as disagreeing with the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yehuda says, ratzel lachlos oliyabim zochel etov. That it's all up to his choice. If he, the king, voluntarily decides that he wants to give her chalitza, and he's mochel on his cover, then that's okay. And offhand, the Gemara seems to think that the chachamim here are absolutely correct, and we don't understand Rabbi Yehuda. How can Rabbi Yehuda allow the king, on a voluntary basis, to decide that he'll do the chalitza? Eini, is this so, va'omar Rav Ashi, we have a statement of Rav Ashi, this is in Masech the Kiddushin. Afilu leman diomar nasi shemachal kvodo kvodo machul, melech shemachal kvodo ein kvodo machul. So the statement of Rav Ashi differentiates between a nasi on the one hand and a melech on the other hand. So every shevet had its own nasi. And the Nasi was the president who presided and supervised over the members of his Shevet. And he had a certain very important status. We have a whole parasha in Naso. You remember parashas Naso? Yeah. That's great for the Bali Kriya, because every Nasi brought the same exact karbonis there in the Chanukah HaMizbeah. In any event, so we have here a case where the Nasi, although a chayav in kavod, we have to give him respect, he decides he wants to waive his kavod. I'm going to test your knowledge of English now. How do you spell the word wave? W-A-I-V-E. Excellent. W-A-I-V-E. Okay, that's good. I think it's called a homonym. Is that what it's called? Anyway, the word wave could mean two things. Right. If it's W-A-V-E, it means a wave at the in the ocean. But here we're talking about waving your rights.
Also means naf-naf-naf, also is wave.
The naf-naf? Yeah, naf-naf? Okay. But Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machol Shenemar. How do we know that the Melech doesn't have it within his purview, within his license to waive his rights for Kavod? It says Tzom Tasim Alecha Melech. Now offhand, that pasuk is very innocuous. The Torah is telling me in Parashat Shoftim that we have to appoint the king, but the Gemara darshins the separate the repetition of the word Tzom Tasim to teach me Shetehei Maso Shel Shalamelech Alecha, which means that the Chi of Kavod is Alecha. Alecha means on the people. When the Chi of Kavod is imposed upon the people, it's irrelevant. The Melech has no rights. You follow? So even if the Melech would theoretically waive his rights, but nevertheless they're obligated in a Masa Alecha. Alecha means it's upon you and it's not a matter of choice. So that we don't understand the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. How do we reconcile Rabbi Yehuda, who allows the king to receive chalitza and therefore to free his sister-in-law from the bonds of Zikas Yibum? How do we allow him to do so? After all, the Torah says Shetei Maso Alecha, which means that Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machu. So the Gemara answered, mitzvah shiny. This phrase, mitzvah shiny, appears all over Shas. I'd be curious to do a word search, you know, and look for mitzvah shiny all over Shas. Now, mitzvah shiny, which literally means a mitzvah is different, can mean one of two things. Sometimes it means dechia. Dechia means that for the sake of the mitzvah, we'll overlook something. Like, for example, shvus to shvus, b'makom mitzvah is mutter. You know, if you, there's certain things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos because they're only a shvus, so for a mitzvah, we're allowed to do them. Or, for example, you have a case where a mitzvah could override a losas, and it's called esse docha losas. So mitzvah shiny means there's a certain power in the mitzvah. But there's another way of understanding mitzvah shiny, which I think is much more appropriate for our sugya. Mitzvah shiny means that the iser was never formulated by the Torah in a case of mitzvah. I'll give you an example. You know, we're not allowed to wear on our in our garments that we wear, we're not allowed to have both semer of pishtin. That's called what?
Shatnez.
But the Kohanim had shatnez in the begadim. So the Gemara says mitzvah shiny. The Gemara doesn't mean to say that the mitzvah of Big Day Kahuna overrides the Iser of Kelayim. That's not what the Gemara has in mind. What the Gemara has in mind is that there's no Iser Kelayim in the case of a mitzvah. The Torah never prohibited it in the case of a mitzvah. I'll give you another example. There are certain karbanos that we're allowed to bring on Shabbos. That's called Olas Shabbos B'Shabbato. Now that's not a din of dechia. That doesn't mean that for the sake of the mitzvah we're going to override the Shabbos. There are many malachas involved to bring a carbon on Shabbos. But essay would not be docha so many different lavim, and it's an isa misa. Shabbos is a skila. But rather it means that the Torah, for the sake of the mitzvah carbonos, never prohibited those malachas on Shabbos. Well, for example, I'll give you another example. The Gemara in Sukkah is very fascinating. The Gemara in Sukkah says that if you have a hadas and you want to use it for the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, if it has too many berries on it, that's called Ravu Anovav Me'al Olav. If there are more berries than there are leaves to the hadas, then it's possible. So the Gemara wants to know, are you allowed on Yontif itself to remove the berries? So Gemara says you might be over what's called Tikkun Mana. It's one of the Lamates Malachas. So the Gemara says mitzvah shiny. The Gemara doesn't mean to say that the mitzvah overrides the Iser of Maleches Makav Patish. What the Gemara means is that in the case of a mitzvah, that's not the kind of Tikkun which the Torah had in mind. When the Torah said you're not allowed to be metakin amana, like you have a utensil that's partially broken and you have to bang it with a hammer, that's called tikkun mana. But when you're fixing up a hadas for the sake of a mitzvah, that's not called tikkun mana. That's what the Gemara means by mitzvah shiny. Many examples of that. I think our sugya is a perfect example of mitzvah shiny. It doesn't mean that for the sake of the mitzvah of chalitza, we're going to override the Iser of Som Tasim Alechem Echel Shetei Masa Alechem, the Ema, the fear, and the honor and the respect that we have to have for the Melech. That's not what it means. Mitzvah shiny means that in the case of a mitzvah, he's not being mochel on his kavod, but rather he's doing something for the kavod of the mitzvah. When the Torah says that the Melech has to be treated with kavod, that's when the covet of the Melech is at stake. But if the covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, is at stake because of mitzvah, then we're not on the same territory. You know, this is not the territory of a Masa Olecha, that we're undermining the covet of the Melech. Okay, now what happens in the opposite case? The Kohen Gadol dies childless and he leaves a wife without children, obviously, and she falls for Yibam for his brother-in-law.
Is it the Melech or the Kohen?
I meant to say Melech. Okay. Did I say Kohen Gadol? Sometimes I confuse it because that's the nature of our parak here. It's all about comparing a Kohen Gadol to a Melech. So again, in the case of the wife of the Kohen Gadol, she falls for Yibam, everything is perfect, everything's fine. But now we're talking about the case of the wife of the Melech. Now, we're going to see soon that the wife of a Melech is not allowed to, the widow of a Melech is not allowed to be married to anyone. Again, we may have an exception to that rule, we'll see. And therefore the whole purpose of giving this woman chalitza is really futile. Why? Because what's the purpose of chalitza?
So she can marry.
So she can get married, but here she can't get married to anyone. And the Mishnah tells us, ein nosim. Let's go back to the Mishnah just to remind ourselves of the Mishnah back on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, I believe. Yep. Where is it?
Yep.
See? Trouble with this Gemara is you have to turn many, many pages. So it says in the Mishnah, it's about five lines before the end of the Mishnah, it says, ein nosim almanaso. No one's allowed to marry the widow of the king. Okay, again, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that there is an exception to that rule. We'll get to that in just 5 minutes. Good. So that's what it says in our Mishnah, that no one's allowed to marry the almana, the widow of a melech. Okay. Now, if this widow needs yibum or chalitza, because the king has a live, surviving brother, then the brother will not be miyabim her, because ain't no sin almanoso shamel. The brother has no right to violate this iser of marrying the widow of the king. In the case of chalitza, it's pointless. It's an exercise in futility, because the whole purpose of chalitza, as we said before, is to be matir, to allow her to get married, but she can't marry anyone. But now we have the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Now let's take a look at the proof that Rabbi Yehuda brings to allow one person on the face of the earth to marry the widow of the king. And who is that? Hamelech, nosei hamelech almenoso shel melech. So the second king who's going to replace the late king, he's allowed to marry the widow of the late king. And Rabbi Yehuda has a proof. He doesn't create this heter from his own mind. She came atzinu b'daven amelech, nasa she nasa al menasa shel shol amelech. Now, how do we know that David, who was appointed as the successor of Shol, would be able to marry Shol's widow? And the pasuk says in Shmuel Beis, it says v'etnolecha. This is Nasan Aravi addressing David Amelch, and he says v'etnolecha es beis adonecha. Now watch the next phrase. V'esneshei adonecha b'chekecha. Adonecha, your master, is a reference to your predecessor Shol Amelch. Neshei adonecha is a reference lechora, until we get to the Gemara, to the wives of Shaul. Bechekecha means for intimacy, for marriage, meaning that God tells David HaMelech, and through the Navi, as he prophesizes that David will in fact get married to the widow of Shaul HaMelech. The Gemara is going to now have to answer Chachamim, right? The Chachamim say that as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, no one is allowed to marry the almana of a melech, not even another melech. So what are we going to do with the case of David HaMelech? So now let's take a look at the Braisa. Tanya. Now let's see if everybody has the place. We're on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, and we're about 12 lines down from the top. The first word in the line is actually an abbreviated word, chule, and then after the two dots you'll see Tanya. Amru lo l'Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim now have to reinterpret the pasuk of etna, etc. Es neshe adonecha. What does this refer to? And he says the following. The pasuk doesn't mean that David is allowed to marry the widow of Shaul, but rather nashim hara'uyos lo mi beis hamelech. Nasan Anavi is revealing to David that he will marry those that he's allowed to marry, namely those who are not married to the king, because he's not allowed to marry a woman that was married to Shaul, but mi beis Shaul, from the house of Shaul. Because in the beginning of the pasuk it says Beis Adonecha, and then it says Nishay Adonecha. The Chachamim are going to take that word Beis Adonecha, and they're going to repeat it, so to speak, in the Sefer at the end of the pasuk, and it's going to say Nishay Adonecha, meaning Nishay Beis Adonecha. Now the word bias here refers to the entire family. So what Nassan is telling David, he's going to marry girls from the family of Shaul HaMelech. Right, so there are two daughters of Shaul HaMelech that were married off to David. And the pasuk here is alluding to them. Who are these two women? Maininu. And the Gemara says that's Merav u'Michal. So these are the daughters of Shaul. And what Nasa meant to tell David is not that he's going to marry the widow of Shaul, but he's going to marry the daughters of Shaul. That's called Mibes Adonecha. Okay. Now, the truth is that this Gemara is very difficult, because we're going to see later on that David never married Merav.
Didn't do it halakha. He didn't do it.
Correct. They tried to marry her off, but she didn't marry her off. So Rav Osa, I'm going to leave this question in abeyance for now. We're going to have to figure out what is es neshei adonecha b'chekech, and the word neshei is in plural, and the Gemara says that the word neshei refers to two daughters of Shaul that were married off to David, when in truth the Torah doesn't recognize, the halacha doesn't recognize the marriage of David to Merav, because you're not allowed to marry two sisters. All right.
Would you have the same problem marrying the widows? Because you can't marry your mother-in-law. So he couldn't really marry Michal's mother, who is the widow of Shaul.
Correct. So there's no question in our minds that David HaMelech, says the Chachamim, did not marry any of the widows of Shaul. Not even the widows of Shaul that he would have been allowed to marry had there not been widows of the Melech. But you can't marry the widow of a Melech. What the Pasuk is telling me is that he would be married to the daughters of the Melech. Good. Shalu Talmidav Es Rabbi Yossi. How could it be that Shaul would marry two sisters? Now, the question here is, the Torah says that you're not allowed to marry two sisters. Now, what's the story here about David marrying the daughters of Shaul? So let me give you a brief review of the 17th chapter of Shmuel Aleph. Okay, we're not learning Tanakh now, but just to give you a little bit of the background. The major adversary of Klal Yisrael at that time were the Plishtim. Okay? And the Plishtim had a tremendous warrior by the name of, everybody, Goliath. And Goliath went out publicly, and he was Macharef Marchos Yisrael. He started blaspheming and cursing the Israeli camp, as Palestinians tend to do. And he says, if there's any Jew that would fight against me, then that would indicate that the Jewish people would defeat the Plishtim. So Shaul HaMelech notifies, or shall we say announces, that any person who will be able to defeat Goliath, first of all, I will grant him Osher Gadol, a lot of wealth, and not only that, I will give him my daughter to marry. And David, of course, destroys Goliath. So Shaul says, I'm going to give you my daughter Merav in order to fulfill my promise. But he didn't do so. Shaul never actually delivered the goods as far as Merav is concerned, but he married Merav off to somebody by the name of Adriel. Now, later on, Shaul wanted to fulfill his promise to David. So he decided to give his other daughter, Michal, to David to get married. And he wanted to demand, extract another gift, so to speak, from David, another act of a warrior act. So he told David that I will give you Michal if you do the following. Now keep in mind, Shaul technically was obligated to give Michal to marry to David based on the fact that David killed Goliath. But, you know, David, unfortunately, Shaul is playing games over here. So what does he demand from David? He demands that David kill 100 Plishtim and bring back their arlos, their foreskins. And that's exactly what David did. And when he presented the arlos to Shaul HaMelech, Shaul gave Michal, his daughter, to David HaMelech as a present, as a reward for this act of bringing 100 arlos of Plishtim. But Shaul now becomes the enemy of David, and he actually sends to kill David. David becomes a fugitive. And after that happens, Shaul takes his daughter Michal and marries her off to somebody by the name of Palti ben Laish. We're going to have a lot to talk about, I don't think we'll get to today, about this individual named Palti ben Laish. He's a big, big tzaddik. Now Shaul dies, and Avner ben Ner appoints the son of Shaul, not Yonasan, because Yonasan's already gone by now, but somebody by the name of Ish-Boshes is now appointed as the replacement king for the late Shaul. Now at this point in time, although Avner is on the same side as Ish-Boshes, but he gets angry at Ish-Boshes. And at that point, Avner decides to transfer the kingship from Ish-Boshes over to David HaMelech. David tells him that he's not going to be willing to take over the kingship and to comply with Avner's wish unless Avner could deliver the goods. In this case, what's the goods? Michal. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, was married off originally to David. David now wants to collect his wife back. David doesn't recognize the marriage between Michal and Palti ben Laish because she was a married woman. So Palti ben Laish has no ability to marry her. So David sends a message back to the powers to be. And he says that I have rights to Michal. And if you have any question, I'll show you Mea Arlos. I'll prove to you that I destroyed 100 Plishtim, and here they're Arlos. And at this point, Ish-Boshes gets up, and he grabs Michal, his sister, and he sends from Palti ben Laish, and he sends her to David HaMelech. And then David HaMelech complies with the wish of Avner, and he becomes the king of Israel. Now, the Gemara is going to have to deal with the following issue. It seems that after David killed Goliath, Shaul married off Merav, his first daughter, to David. And then he married her off a second time to Adriel. The same thing, he pulls the same shtick when he gets to Michal. He marries her off to David and then he gives her over to what's his name, Palti ben Laish. So Adriel and Palti ben Laish, you know, are both illegitimate marriage partners for the daughters of Shaul. So David's marriage to these two daughters would be considered legitimate. And so the Gemara is going to have to deal with this because, again, as I said to you before, how could he marry two sisters? Now let's just add, we're going to fast forward now to the end of Sefer Shmuel. And there the Torah tells us that David took a number of the grandchildren of Shaul who were guilty of murdering what's called Kohanei Nov, and he put them to death. Now there's another parasha here at the end of Sefer Shmuel about David and the Givonim. I think we touched on this when we were learning Ksubis here in this very same room, for any of you who were here in the summertime. In any event, amongst the various grandchildren of Shaul, who were guilty of murder and therefore were condemned to death by David, are Chameshes b'nei Michal bas Shaul asher yolda le'Adriel. Now this is very strange, because we're talking about Michal. If Michal was married to anyone, it was not Adriel. I mean, it was Merav that was married off to Adriel. So how can the pasuk says that these are five children for the marriage between Michal and Adriel? Besides which, Michal was not even married legally to Palti Ben Laish. Okay, so that's another problem that we're going to have to face in understanding our sugya. So a lot of issues here. But in any event, the first issue that we want to face is the issue of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yossi. Heich nasa David shtei achios b'chayeh. How could it be that David was married to both Merav and Michal, two sisters, when the Torah says, V'isha, this is in Parshas Kedosha, it says, V'isha l'achosa lo sikach. You're not allowed to marry the sister of your wife. And this Iser applies even if there was only Kiddushin. Because keep in mind that the marriage between David and Merav was not consummated. There was only Kiddushin. The Gemara is going to have a whole analysis of that Kiddushin, but there was never Nisuin. But it doesn't matter. The Iser of marrying two sisters would be even if it was only Erisin, the first stage of marriage. Now, I don't know if this is the place to get into a whole long discussion about the difference between Erisin and Nisuin. That's for a different shiur. But for us today, we have to ask the following question. Are you allowed to marry two sisters?
No.
Ah, excellent. Okay. I know a few good Jews that were married to two sisters. In fact, it's quite common. The Taz was the son-in-law of the Bach. He wanted to marry the Bach's second sister. The Bach's younger daughter, his wife's sister, after his wife died. At the end, the Bach refused. But that's a whole story unto itself. Amar Lahen, so Rav Yossi turns his Talmidim. Now, I don't know if Rav Yossi had independent knowledge that what he was about to present was true, or this was the only way he could figure out how David was married to these two sisters. Michal achar misas Merav nisa. So Merav was the oldest sister, and David HaMelech only married Michal after the death of Merav. So the Rosh asks the following question. He says, if you calculate it, he says, Meshach Yimei Malchuso Shel Shaul, during the balance of the reign of Shaul, David was Makadesh Merav. And then Shaul married Merav off, and it seems from the Pasuk that somehow, even though there was a marriage to David HaMelech, nevertheless, Merav was given over to Adriel, and they have five children. Very strange, you know, how did this happen? But be that as it may, although we don't understand how to recognize the marriage between Merav and Adriel, they had five children. These are Shaul HaMelech's grandchildren. And then at that point, after she gave birth to these five children, Merav died. And at that point, David marries Michal. And at that, after he marries Michal, he hides away for 4 months during the reign of Shaul HaMelech in a place called Gat, which you can see even today. The archaeologists found the place. So now, it's a little bit strange, because when you calculate it, the Tanakh describes the amount of time, defines the amount of time that Shaul reigned as king. Anybody know how long he reigned as king? 2 years. Shaul was only in Malchus for 2 years. Now, how could it be that Shaul gives his daughter Merav to Adriel? She has five children. Then Merav dies, and Shaul gives over his daughter his second daughter Michal to David HaMelech before he dies, when he only reigned for 2 years. So the one that asks this question is the Rosh, and the Rosh gives the following answer. He says the following, Tzarech Lomar, Shemerav Yolda Pa'amayim Ta'omim, she had two sets of twins, Ve'esachamishi Yolda Li'achar Shisha Chadoshim. So in other words, he's trying to fit these five children into a period of less than 2 years. So 1 year, which I guess would be 9 months, would be for the first set of twins, another set of twins 9 months, and then 6 months, you'll make the calculation, for the birth of the third, I'm sorry, the fifth child. And then shortly afterwards, Shaul gives over his second daughter after Michal dies. After Merav dies, he gives over his second daughter Michal to marry David. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, that I have a different answer to the question, how was David able to marry both Merav and Michal, two sisters? Kedushei Tos Hoyelo b'Merav. That in fact, David was never married to Merav because of the halacha of Kedushei Tos. Now again, I asked the same question that I asked you before. Did Rabbi Yeshua ben Koch have independent knowledge that the marriage between David and Merav was a false marriage under false pretenses? Or he had no choice because he couldn't figure out how it would be possible that David married Merav, that David married Michal, after the death of Merav. I mean, Merav is the mother of five children. Anyway, so the Gemara says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi has a pasuk. What does it say in the pasuk? It says that you remember that after the death of Shaul, David claims that he deserves Michal because he took the lives of 100 plishtim. Tna es ishti es Michal. Asheri rasti li b'mea orlos plishtim. Okay, fine. What does that pasuk have to do with the marriage between David and Merav? My Talmudah, what do you see here? Omer Rav Papa, we have to read the pasuk. It says es ishti es Michal. Now, why did the Torah have to repeat itself? Es ishti ves Michal. It could have just said es Michal ishti. But es ishti, es Michal, sounds like a mute. And what's the mute? Michal ishti, velo merav ishti. I'm married to Michal, and I was never married to Merav, because the marriage between me and Merav were kiddushei tos. Again, I'd love to know exactly what this kiddushei tos is all about. So for that, we have to see the next piece of Gemara. My Kiddushei Tos, what was the Tos over here? What was the mistaken premise of this marriage that invalidates the marriage? The Chsiv, the Pasuk says, again, we're in Shmuel Aleph, and we're talking about the fact that Shaul HaMelech made a promise that anyone who kills Goliath would be able to marry his daughters. So it says there, Vayaha Ish Asher Yakenu, Yashrenu HaMelech Osher Gadol, and then it says, Vesbito Tita Iten Lo. He promises, as a reward to the killer of Goliath, to provide him with Osher Gadol, a lot of great wealth. Azel v'katli, David went ahead and he killed Goliath. And now, Shaul, he comes to Shaul and he wants Shaul's daughter to marry her. Omar lo, so Shaul says to David, Milva isloch gabai. And I'm a Kaddish, but Milva ain't a Mekudeshis. Okay, this. At this point, Rabosai, we close Masechta Sanhedrin and we open Masechta Kiddushin. Alright, you ready for this? If a person owes money to someone, let's say he owes money to a woman, so she now received a milva, let's say, a thousand zuz, right? 1,000 zuz. That's a lot of money. And he says to her, you know what? I want to be mekadesh you with that 1,000 zuz. I gave it to you originally as what? As a loan. Now I want to transfer. I want to transform the loan into kesef kedusha. So the Gemara says that's called amekadesh b'milva, eino mekudeshes. That's not a valid kedusha. In other words, you can't be mekadesh an isha with a loan. You have to give us something that she didn't have. In the case of a loan, she already has the money in her possession, and that's not earmarked as kesef kedushin. You got to start from scratch, and you have to give her some other sum that wasn't included in the milveh. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's the principle of mekadesh b'milveh, eino mekudeshes. So Shaul, in response to David's demand, as a result of his killing Goliath, to get the daughter of Shaul as a wife, he says to David, milveh isli gaboy. In other words, I owe you some sort of a chov. Because again, what did Shaul promise the killer of Goliath? It was a twofold promise. Do you remember that? Number one, Yashrenu HaMelech B'Yosher Gadol. That's a financial commitment. And at the same time, Vesbito Ti'itein Lo, and the marriage of my daughter. So now, I owe you two things, correct? I have a chov, number one, to give you Osher Gadol. And number two, to give you my daughter's hand in marriage. Okay. Now, let's assume, again, this is the complicated part, so I hope you'll follow me on this. Let's assume that the miskadeshes is Shaul. Let me explain what I mean. If a girl is below the age of 12, then she's what's called a ketana, and the kesef kedushin, if it has to go to the father. Let me say it even more fundamental. In the case of a ketana, does the Torah recognize a marriage between a ketana and a gadol, and a male gadol?
Yeah.
Yes, and that's kedushei Torah. But the ketana herself could not marry herself off. She doesn't have what's called a yad lekedushin. She doesn't have das. But the Torah appoints the father and puts him in the driver's seat. You know, he steps into her shoes, so to speak, and he decides if and to whom he wants to marry this girl off. And the marriage potential groom has to give the money to the father. Now, what Shaul was saying here is that David, what money are you giving me to marry off my daughter Merab? You're giving me a mechila on the chov. Let me explain. David HaMelech did not demand payment, even though, again, Shaul had committed himself to a double gift, a double reward. But David said, all I want is Michal. The moment he says, all I want is your daughter, that's called giving a milva to a person. Meaning, if you owe me money and I say, well, instead, you know, do this for me or do that for me, then basically I'm like giving that money back to you. Why? Because instead of you're transferring the money to my bank account, I'm recognizing and I'm allowing you to keep it in your bank account. Shaul understood, we'll see how David understood, but Shaul understood that David's kesef kedushin was the chov of the osher gadol that Shaul owed to David as a reward for killing Goliath. And David was saying, all I want is the erusin, the marriage to your daughter, in this case, Merav, and you know what I'm going to give you? My shver Shaul, what am I going to give you, my father-in-law? I'm going to give you the osher gadol. That's called a Makadish B'milv. Why? Because he's not giving the father any new funds. The money was always in the possession of the father, albeit he, David HaMelech, had a shibud. He had a lien, L-I-E, and he had claims to that money. But the money is still considered to be in the possession of Shaul. And therefore, David, according to Shaul's understanding, was being Makadish Merav with what? With Milva. With the money that David has coming to him, which is called, that's lean to him, that's called Meshuvah to him, and that's Makadish B'milva. Alright. So let's see it inside. I mean, we're not finished yet. So Amar Lo, Shaul says to David, Milva Islach Gaboy, right? You know, you have a chov in my possession, meaning you own a chov, I have to pay you up, the Osher Gol that I promised you. And now, you cannot be Makadish Meirav by waiving that chov, because a Makadish Meirav ain't a Makudeshes. A man who wants to give Kesef Kiddush has to give something new. He can't just say, well, the money that I gave you yesterday as a loan is yours, because that money belongs to the Lover, to the borrower. That's called Milva Lotzon. We're not going to get into that right this second, but he has to give, the Makadish has to give a new money. And in this case, Shaul said, you didn't give me any money. All you did was you were mochel my chov. You waived the Yosher Gadol that I promised you, that I owe you, but that's not valid for Kiddushin. And therefore, Azil Yave Li Adriel. So Shaul said that since the marriage is not valid between David and Merav, I'm going to marry off Merav to someone else. Tichsiv, as the pasuk says, "Vayah vayehi be'es teis es Merav b'Shaul leDavid," and then the end of the pasuk says, "Vehi nitno laAdriel liisha," and Shaul gave over Merav as a wife to Adriel. Why? Because Shaul claimed that the marriage to David, of Merav to David, was not a valid marriage. However, the Gemara now tells us what happened actually in the Kiddushin of David to Michal, or Michal to David. Okay. Amale, Shaul says to David, Ibois the Etein Loch Michal, if you want, I'll fulfill my promise by giving you my other daughter, Michal, as a marriage partner, because Merav is married to Adriel, and Merav's marriage to you was not a valid marriage. It was a Makadish B'milva. So Shaul on the second round, okay, in the first round with regard to Merav, what was the great act of David that would bring him the reward of Bas Shaul? That was killing Goliath. Now, Shaul drums up a whole new proposition. And what's that? Zeal Isili, go and bring me Mea Arlos Plishtim. And I guess the idea here is that this would put fear into the hearts of the Plishtim, you know, to show that we mean business over here. I'm going to read the pasuk. It says, "Vayomer Shaul kol tomar leDavid, ein chefetz lamelch b'moar." He doesn't want money to be given to him for marriage to Michal, but rather ki b'mea arlos plishtim lihinakem bi'oyvei hamelch, which is really fascinating because it means, you know, a lot of people wonder whether the Torah is in favor of revenge or not in favor of revenge. I mean, here, in the case of Shaul, the Tanakh goes out of its way to say, Li nokem bi oyvei hamelech.
I have one question. In terms of, I don't know if the whole thing, if she was a katana, could have done Mia and that could answer the whole thing, is why I could marry her later on. And
if Shaul was dead already. I think the Gemara is assuming from the Pesukim that Shaul is still alive. So there's no such thing as Kiddushei Mim. Just one second. I just got distracted for 1 minute here. Okay. Oh. Haktsos vanesivos donu ketzad nasu kiddushin elu yeshe noktu shekodim hariga omar david l'shol shumakadsha v'kesev zeh sheneschayev lo mirosh avur harigas golios yeshe kosu sheshol neschayev lo im harigas golios bilvad v'rak acha hariga ba david l'shol v'kidesh esmira b'chov shenotzar. Okay, so this is a theoretical machlokas here. At what point did David actually marry off Michal? Was it before he killed Goliath because it was already a chov? Or no, the chov only emerges after he kills Goliath. So it's after the death of Goliath, then Shaul owes this chov to David, and David's makadish merav with that chov. Okay, now he says the following: She'ela zu tluya. Okay, well, you know what? We'll hold this off. This is a very interesting paragraph here, but we'll hold it off for now. Yeah, that's also a discussion here, and I don't remember. Oh, here it is: the Avni Meluim. What does he say over here? Just 1 second. I remember there's a discussion about that. I'm going to try to see if I can find it. Okay. Now what happens? So again, Amalei, Shaul says to David, Ibois, the etein lecha Michal, zil aisili mea orlos plishim, ozal the aisile. So David brings Mea Arlos Plishtim. Okay? And now, Amalei Shaul says to David, you know, David is already pressing, he wants Michal, he didn't get Meirav, at least let him get Michal. So Shaul says to him, now I owe you. One second. Why is this milva bepruta? Just 1 second. So Amalei Shaul came and shani chayev luchas osher agadol avurigas goliath v'chein he veisoli mea orlas plishin shavim mamon is nimtza shemilva upruta isli gabe mekevet shbehem kidashta osa einam kudesh estavon chagakom esun kudesh so turns ishti es michal. Okay, so here, Rabosai, we have an even more complicated situation, because keep in mind that the original deal with killing Goliath had two parts to it. Number one, the Osher Gadol, and number two was marrying Meirav. Correct? Did the marriage of Meirav ever take place? Well, according to Shaul HaMelech, it never took place. Why? Because David was offering a milva to be mochel on the Osher Gadol. Now, is that mechila valid? According to Shaul, if the marriage to Meirav, is not valid, then the mechila of David on the chov is not valid. So now Shaul still has an outstanding obligation, a chov, to pay up for the killing of Goliath, the Osher Gadol. Now, in addition to that, Shaul demanded for payment in order to give his daughter Michal for marriage to David, Mea Orlos. Now, Mea Orlos in the Gemara's language is called a Shava Pruta. I mean, Jerry's asking me what you do with it. I don't know, you use it as firewood. I don't know exactly what you do with it. But they talk about it. But I don't want to get distracted with that, please. Let's just assume, trust me on this, that the Mea Orlos is worth a Pruta. Oh. So now, David HaMelech is actually bringing a bag of Mea Arlos and he's giving it to Shaul and he's saying to him that I will give you this Shavapruta for your daughter's hand, Michal's hand in marriage. So Shaul turns around and he says to him, wait a minute, you're giving me two things. You're giving me the Shavu Pruta, the Mea Arlos, and at the same time you're giving me Mechilas Chol, Mechilas Milv. Why? Because David Melch is repeating what he did the first time, and he's saying, you know what, just give me your daughter, I don't need the Osher Gadol. And now we have a question, what's the status of a person who marries a woman and he gives her two things at the same time for that marriage? He gives her a Shava Pruta, and at the same time he gives us Mechilas Milva. Do you follow? Yeah. So in other words, at time T1, Reuven gave Leah X amount of money as a loan. At time T2, Reuven says to Leah, I'm going to now give you a Shava Pruta, and I'm going to waive the money that you owed me, and I want you to be Mekudeshes to me. So she accepts now two things. She accepts, number one, of the Shava Kesef, and number two, she accepts the Mechilas Milva. So Amar Leis, as Shaul says, Milva Upruta Islach Gabach. And therefore, the Kiddushin to Michal is not valid. And here we have a machlokas between Shaul and David, the Lavdish machlokas. Shaul Savar Milve Upruta Date Amilve. Now, the word Date is in the feminine. It means she, the woman who accepts this, is accepting the milva. The milva is worth a lot more than the Shava Pruta. The milva is worth 1,000. Others say that the word date is referring to the Makadesh, which means that the Makadesh has in mind, hey, you know what I'm giving you? I'm giving you a Mechilas Milva that's worth a hon tofot. It's very expensive. Forget about the Pruta. So date a milva. Now in Kiddushin, the validity of Kiddushin depends upon what? Not just on the money, but also on das. And if your das is on something that's invalid, for example, on milva, then the whole kedusha is completely null and void. David savar milva upruta daitei apruta, that he has das not only on the milva, which that can't generate kedusha, but he also has das on the pruta. And therefore David said, I married Michal, kidasu kidin, I gave Shol mea arlos plishtim, which are worth a pruta, and my das was on the pruta. So from now until doomsday, there's going to be a machlokas between Shol and David as to who Michal is married to. Shol thinks she's not married at all, and therefore he marries her off to Palti ben Laish. David knew that no, that the kedushin to his kedushin were valid because milva pruta daite apruta, and therefore the marriage between Michal and Palti ben Laish was a fake marriage. It was not valid. Iboy Seima, this will conclude for today. The Kuliyam, everybody agrees, milva pruta daite apruta. Even Shaul would have to admit that this kedushin should be valid. But Shaul Savar, here's Jerry's question. I thought it was I was looking at the bottom, but I forgot it's in the top. Shaul said, Lo chazi v'lo midi, that the mea arlos, you know, do you want just sweep them up and throw them into the rubbish bin? You know, they're worthless. Lo chazi v'lo midi, they're not worth anything. So if anything, there's only a Mechilas Milva, and then it becomes Mekadesh Milva and Mekudesh, is therefore the marriage between Michal and David is not valid. David Savar, Chazu, okay, here's the big thing. You ready for the drum roll? What do you do with Mea Arlos? I mean, I'm sure it's a relevant question to you every day of your life. Is Lekalde Vishunri. You feed it to the dogs and the cats. So if you own a dog, right? I don't know, Jerry, you don't know anybody who owns a dog? Yeah, I have to. I forgot, I always forget the name.
Roni. The dog?
No, the dog. Roni, I know. Chamudi, right, Chamudi. Oh, the famous Chamudi, right. She is Chamudi, actually. But anyway, so feed Chamudi. I don't know if that's the first thing I would buy for my dog. I'm not sure, but anyway, I'm not a big feeder of dogs, so we're going to have to ask my friend Aaron here. He raises dogs, so we'll see what he says about this.
It's protein.
Yeah, I guess. Right? And Shunri is you feed the cats. So if you own a cat, then this is a good idea. Now, I don't know, David, did Shaul HaMelech have a whole, what?
Say, nobody owns cats. Cats own you.
I always thought that about dogs, but okay, you're thinking about, maybe even cats. Okay. So what happens is that the, if you hold like David HaMelech, then David actually gave Shaul a Shavu Pruta. And even Shaul would agree that Makadish B'milva Pruta Mekudeshes. But Shaul held that something which is only roy for klovim and chasu and chatulim, if a katamol, right, that's not a shava pruta. So machlokas now becomes what's the value of mea orlos plishtin? And Rabosei, I would tell you the following, that Leviani is daiti, the machlokas here really revolves around das. When a person gets married off, they expect some moment that they can cash in. You know, the fact that they can feed it to a dog or to a cat, I'm not sure if that's enough. You know, for das kedusha. But lemaisa, that's the end of this part of the sugya. We're not finished with the sugya tomorrow. Mirtz Hashem, we'll finish with the sugya because it's not clear whether these five children were born in a marriage relationship between Michal and Palti, or was Michal and Adriel, like the pasuk seems to indicate, but Adriel was after all given over to marriage to Merav. It's a whole bilbul that we'll try to sort that all out tomorrow. If anyone's interested, at 10:30 we have an Ian Shear about a melech and the relationship between a melech and judgment. Can he serve on the Beis Din as a judge?
You have the klal of kiyikapish, right?
Just 1 minute? Yeah.
Kiyikapish? So you would think it's his das to shem.
Very interesting. It says kiyikapish isha, and we need the das of both the makadish and the miskadeshes. And I would probably present the following thesis. Her das is even more important than his das. And that's why if there's any question about the clarity of his intention and she doesn't know what he has in mind, the whole condition is invalid.
In this case, it's not her das, it's the father.
Right. So the father, you know, is he feeding these Arlos to his cats and dogs? I don't know. Yeah.